it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
It's Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
Here's Salt Lamakia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
All right, baseball is not boring, and there's nobody who proves it on a day-in, day-out basis ever since I've known him than manager David Ross. Manager, dancer David Ross, catcher David Ross, announcer David Ross, manager, whatever, T-shirt wearer David Ross, whatever you want. What do you want to be called?
You got to come in with more. If baseball is not boring, you got to come in with a little more excitement to start the show off.
You're the one. Listen, I scream it from the mountaintops every single day. It's my my mission, my passion, my job. So
I mean, manager David Ross. I like that one.
Manager David. All right.
Yeah, that's what John Lester calls me. Lester still calls me. Manager David.
That's what manager David. Oh, really? Even now? Oh wow! Look at you. Yeah. All right. You have been part of the cause because you have worn the Baseball Isn't Boring T-shirt. We have confirmation of it walking through the streets of Chicago with wearing it.
I should have worn it for the show. I should have, just at least had it on here. But it's my go-to. It doubles as an undershirt at times, and I rocked it at the went to the beach last week and had it. Ooh. I pack it. It's on the regular rotation.
And I don't even want to ask. So you are the only manager in the history of baseball that has not only has a Baseball Isn't Boring shirt, but has a T-shirt with my Twitter handle.
I do have both. That is, I am like your self-promoter. That's for sure. You just keep feeding me T-shirts. I must look like a guy that needs a T-shirt every time I see you.
Well, listen, I pay you in T-shirt and smiles in podcasts. But I appreciate it, man. I appreciate always when you jump on. This is obviously our new venture. It's national, so you're speaking to the nation.
Oh, cool. Now.
Congratulations.
Nice.
So, I want to get to a couple things. But, as I text to you, we like to sort of break things down in parts of baseball. This is why baseball is so awesome, which is little things. You can take something and have something so small and have such great stories and such great feelings. And when that happens on Saturday night, when the Houston Astros clinch that game and that last out is made, I don't think people understand what that feeling is like. Not only do I think that people understand what that feeling is like, but then take it to another level about catching the pitch and jumping into the arms. There's not a lot of people on this planet, David, that can say, I did that and I know what that feeling is. I'm just going to step back. You tell me what that feels like.
Oh man, you're giving me this. I didn't know we were just gonna have all smiles this pod. I don't know. Like this is gonna sound so bad, but I watch and I'm jealous, to be honest with you, because I know what that's like. So I get this sense of jealousy, like, man, I want to be on that stage. That's why I'm doing my job right now. Is I talk all the time to the guys, like I'm managing because I want to do that again. I want to do something cool, historic. That feeling is what I'm chasing still, and being a part of that a couple of times. I want to know what it's like to do it as a manager, to lead a group of men, to be a part of that special team that you're connected to for the rest of your life. I'm still, I run into, Brock Holt or Xander Bogaerts or, different guys that You know, when I get on here with you, I just think Boston, but I run into different guys I'm connected to for the rest of my life and keep in touch with because of those moments. Koji, you know, striking out Carpenter there, you know, with that splitty away and me telling the umpire nice job and thanking God for that opportunity and then running out there. And I've never felt another grown man in my arms feel so light, in my life. You know, take that quote where you will, but like, I just, it's a special feeling, man. You work so hard and you see the joy on those guys. You see Dusty Baker and all that he's gotten to accomplish in his professional baseball career and the joy that's on his face and those players and how they are connected, man. There's nothing better than that. But the sense of jealousy is what runs through my body. I want to be there so bad.
Well, in fairness, I was extremely jealous watching you dance on Dancing with the Stars. So there you go. So we all have to be jealous about something, but I want to go to that moment you talk about. And like you said, you win it with the Cubs. You won it a couple different times. You've had that feeling a couple different times, but when you're catching, this is, again, I do not know what this feels like. When you're catching, Koji's pitching, Carpenter's up.
Yep.
You know that you were one strike away from the ultimate thing that you've been chasing your whole life, that you're chasing the whole year, the 7 months. You put your fingers down. What do you remember about that? Like, do you remember thinking that it was, okay, we just have to, this is a cliche, but we have to execute like another pitch?
No.
This is what's going to happen. He's going to throw this pitch and I'm going to run out.
Well, what happened? The first two outs were fly balls to Johnny Gomes and left. So I'm like, it looks like Johnny might get all three. You know, that was in my mind. I distinctly remember, you know, this is like just my brain. Like, don't forget to thank the umpire. I'm already running through because we had the game in hand. Like, right. Don't thank the umpire. Don't forget to thank God. And just keep throwing the splitty. I'm not going anything but Koji's splitty. We had two strikes on him, on Matt. And I'm just like, I'm throwing splitties until he either puts one in play or we punch him out or we walk him. I'm not throwing anything else unless Koji shakes it off. And I remember just continuing. I mean, Koji was probably one of the best bullpen guy closers I've ever. I mean, he went on that run that was just ridiculous. And so you knew the game was over and he was coming in and he could throw that splitty wherever. I remember setting up middle away to Carp and it just disappeared and I caught it and was like, holy cow, I just caught the last out. And then I you know, run out there, did my thing and run out there and it was just chaos after. Then it's all a blur. Like, it really is all the way to, like, till you get to the parade. I think it all is, like, on both teams. It's once the out is made, it's just all a blur of partying and celebrating and hugging. And I think you can think about all the things that can go wrong. I think I try to process those things within that moment. But I remember getting two strikes. And it's like, well, we're throwing all splitties here till he gets out or gets a hit or gets on base. That was the main thing I was thinking about the process. There was no lot. What was the final score? 6-0. What was it?
It was a lot to a little. Yeah.
I think we were at like 6 runs or something. And but the other memory I remember distinctly in that was I was on deck when Stephen Drew hit the home run to put us up a pretty good bit. And I remember standing on deck and watching, he hit it. And I knew it was gone right then. It gave us a pretty good lead. And I remember as soon as he hit it, I looked in the stands, like, take in this moment for a second. This is going to be really cool. And I just looked in the stands and watched the crowd react. That was probably one of my favorite moments of probably all my playoff experiences. It was so cool to watch the fans react in unison, being on the field when you know something just happened, but they hadn't clued in on it yet because they're in suspense whether it's going to go out or not. That was a really cool moment.
What was there a difference in the feeling between the one in Chicago and the one in Boston?
Yeah, the one in Chicago was a lot tighter. It was game 7. We're at Cleveland. I think the cool thing about Boston was being at home. I just heard something about the Astros World Series, the first time a team has celebrated home since that 13 team. So I thought that was really cool. I remember just like we got to party in our own locker room, and our families were there, and it was just so, like, you know, it just was home. And that World Series, I go back to, that was just a special, I mean, with the bombing and everything, that was, that's just, right. There's just a deeper connection on and kind of mantra to that World Series than the one in Chicago. I was much more poised, the veteran guy, you know, I was leaning on David Ortiz and Dustin Pedroia and, you know,
yeah. In Chicago, you're like, get on my back, boys. This is how it's done.
Well, I was the one talking to the young guys and, like, keeping the mindset right, I think, and just trying to also, like, I was retiring after that year, so enjoying that run and trying to take it all in. We had great leadership, and Joe Maddon and Lester was there, and we had Lackey was there. Ben Zobrist had just won a World Series, so we had good veterans. We also had a lot of young guys that were just in awe of the moments, and I remember that feeling and could relate to a lot of that.
You know, David, I was we talked a little bit about this when I saw you in Chicago for the critically acclaimed book that's coming out March 14th, A Damn Near Perfect Game, which you're part of, by the way. Congratulations.
Oh, nice.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. Amazon, you can order it now. we were talking about this, about what it feels like to win a championship. And I might have told you this at the time, like, I always remember, for whatever reason, the image of Steve Young holding up the trophy, like this coming out of his skin. And then you have images of the Houston Astros guys like Trey Mancini. I see the same sort of thing. I see, obviously, Dusty Baker. Can you describe what it's like to win a World Series championship, that moment?
It's hard, man. It's hard to put into words. Dustin Pedroia, I'll tell you a story. I'm sitting in Game On after we won. And we're partying, and it's me and him sitting on the couch and watching everything just kind of go down, and everybody party, and everybody's family, their wives, everybody's just, you know, enjoying the moment. And I was just so exhausted. I sat down for a moment, and he was sitting there, and it was like, how's it feel, Rossi? And I was like, I don't know, man. I was just kind of numb. You're just like, well, you did that, but it doesn't seem real. And he says to me, it won't. It doesn't. Because he had won one.
Right.
And so I don't know. The appreciation that I have is, like, after the fact and watching highlights and going back and watching some of the games, the 16 series I've watched over and over again, and seeing some of those things and hearing what the announcers are talking about that, you know, you're not thinking during the game and the way they're doing it. But the feeling isn't. I don't know if it's even indescribable. It's joy. It's a journey you've gone on to reach this goal that seems so hard. But the 13 team, we were talking about it a lot. We talked about winning a World Series in spring training. I mean, Dustin is great like that. His leadership and David's and the kind of group of guys we had were just, you know, I missed a lot of that season with concussions and getting back, and I thought I would just be a piece to help out and ended up starting a lot of the games in the World Series and catching John and catching the last out. It's just like, what a crazy road I just went on. We just went on as a team, and you started that back in, you know, February 13th or 14th. And now we're world champions. Like, what does that even mean? Like, you know, like for me, it was just indescribable, and the accolades come and all the cool things come afterwards. But, like, actually being world champions, when you finally experience it, it's just historic. Like, that doesn't, you're celebrated forever. It doesn't go away.
And it doesn't go away for months. Like, Gomes was on, he's talking about this. He's like, he said, you have the initial celebration, you have you have a couple days, you have the parade. Then you go home. Then you have to party with your buddies. Then you have to party with the next layer of buddies.
Right.
You know, and then
your kid's school. I remember going to my kid's school and they were all locked in on the, I brought them all t-shirts back to my daughter's second grade class. And, like, now I'm taking pictures with the kids. And then, you know, there's an autograph signing a month later and you're getting paid to go hang with fans and sign autographs. And then, you know, and then spring training starts back up and they start it all over again. Like, it's just, you're on this crazy run, and everywhere you go, whether you're in the airport or You just, you know, it's kind of, you just, you do, you get celebrated that team. You hear my favorite thing that I get to hear is I'll be in the airport, I'll be at dinner, somebody will come to me and they start to tell me their story. Like, people's stories are phenomenal. They tell you the Cubs, this was my grandpa, this was like, I was at a graveside, I was with my aunt. Like, they know it to a T, and it's Boston. Like, you don't know how important. I've been a Red Sox fan my entire life, the bearded brothers, and I grew a beard that year. Just like the stories people have, that's my favorite thing, because it takes me back to the moments of winning. And when I get to jog my memory on those moments, it obviously makes me feel good and smile. So they think they're telling me this cool story for them, but it's lighting me up inside too. So that's kind of that's the thing that never goes away.
See, I'm here to get you fired up for the season, man.
You're like, getting me fired up, buddy.
Yeah, let's go.
I'm trying to do Thanksgiving dinner plan, like plan the meals out for Thanksgiving over here, and you're getting me locked in for next year.
You're gonna get on the phone to Jed Hoyer, right? In 2 seconds, you go, come on, hey, come on, this is free agency, let's go. I do want to spin it. It's sort of relating to something you went through, to something that's sort of like on the horizon now in the world of baseball, which is free agency. And I always remember this, David, is that, you know, we talk a lot about that 2013 Red Sox team and how that was constructed and how they took the money and they sort of spread it around a little bit. I remember Josh Hamilton was the big guy that offseason, right? But they signed you and Victorino and Napoli and Dempster and Gomes and all these guys. But you were the first one. You were there, from what I remember, you were the first call. So free agency, it hits midnight or whatever it is. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the Red Sox, like they called you first. And so my question is, how impactful is that for you, or was that for you? And is that something that is something that you, maybe you and Jed, whoever, that this is a very real thing in baseball, the importance of showing a guy, maybe not the highest paid guy, but you're a priority for us?
Well, you're hit around the head. Obviously, only Ben knows who all they called, but like, they called me. They said one of our top priorities is going to be the other catcher. I mean, we always going to be in tandem with Salty, mm-hmm. And they told me I was a priority because of some of the dismay they had been through in 12 and like trying to get together a bunch of you know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but this is what they say, you know, get good clubhouse guys that know baseball and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they did that. If you look at the guys, Johnny Gomes, phenomenal reputation, Ryan Dempster, Shane Victorino, Mike Napoli, all these guys are good humans as well as good players and good people. And I think that's why we came together so fast. But that did make that, that was everything. As a player, you want to feel important. You want to matter. I was a backup catcher. I backed up Brian McCann. He's a, you know, 6-time silver slugger, 6-time all-star, tons of accolades. I was a backup. And for them to show me, one, dollars matter, but with the way they pursued me and the way they wanted to make something happen and the way they put their best foot forward right away, that was everything. It was an easy decision. There was nothing else even close, because of how hard the Red Sox were pushing. Like, we want David Ross. He matters. And to come from a career 220 hitter and a backup catcher, you know, like, that was everything for me. So to fall in love with that place and that organization. And I asked Ben, I remember after winning the World Series, I asked Ben, like, okay, like, what's the real reason that you were pursuing me? And he said, you know, your reputation was really good in the game. And, you know, there's run production and there's run prevention. And like, looking at your numbers, like, you prevented runs and you won a lot of games when you were catching. And that's something we felt like we needed. And like, that was a perfect fit for us. So, that was really cool, you know, to hear him say that. And the fact that I identified me and, was special, because that hasn't always been my reputation too. So like, I was proud that, like, I was able to go somewhere like Atlanta, change my reputation to somebody that was a good teammate and valued others and winning, and some of the mindset changes that I had went through as I matured and grew up was really cool for me to know that other people were out there saying that and seeing that.
Have you done that? Have you done that as a manager since you've been a manager? Have you guys got together and said, hey, you know what? I'm going to call this guy at 12:01. I don't know what it is, 12:01 or whatever, you know, when it starts.
I've definitely been the sales pitch guy for sure. Seiya Suzuki stands out. He was courted by a lot of teams last year, but I definitely sent my fair share of videos to him or whoever.
Do tell. I mean, what do you got? I mean, what's David Ross recruiting pitch look like?
I talk to him like I talk to you, like, you know what I mean? I try to keep it real. I try to say what I value about the player and the person and what it's like in Chicago and how I've been treated, what it's like to win a World Series, what my goals are, why a player like that fits for me. And I keep it honest with energy, like me and you talking, buddy. Like when I get on the horn with you, it's smiles and fun. And yeah, like you said, let's go, let's get some free agents. I'm saying,
yeah,
I know you got choices, but you're coming to Chicago. Let's not.
You got any free agents you want me to send some t-shirts to? I can do that.
Let's not shock them early on, but free t-shirts. You never know. All right.
Listen, I mean, I'm not going to say this, but Anthony Rizzo doesn't have a baseballs and boring t-shirt yet. So,
I mean, hey, we'll take all the good players that want to come to Chicago and want to help win championships. I promise.
do you like that? Do you like that part of the job? I mean, you obviously it feels good when you do it. Like, say, Suzuki came there. Sure, but you like that?
Yeah, that definitely feels good. You know what I'm passionate about is just like getting guys that want to be there. And you know, you work in Boston, you get to be around that group consistently. Like, listen, I'm blessed to have a major league job. I think there's a couple of special cities that I've been in throughout my playing career that I would say are a little bit different or above the rest, I would say, in certain areas. And like, to win in those spaces and to be a part of championships and winning teams and cities that are great, that are passionate about baseball, that love baseball, I'm freaking super passionate about that. I freaking love that shit, and it drives me. So I want to be good. Like, we're trying to be better as soon as possible. So the more good players we can get to couple with the ones we've got coming and the ones that are already there, I want to do that. I want to do what, you know, Alex Cora has done as a manager. I want to do what AJ Hinch has done as a manager. I want to do what Dusty Baker just did. I want to try to do that. And so I'm passionate about that. So when I give a sales pitch, I try to, that comes out, I think, naturally. It's not even a sales pitch. It's just like, hey,
no, man, it's your real, like, that's
who I am. Yeah.
Yeah. This is, listen, I would play for you. Congratulations.
I'm looking to upgrade a little more than that, Rob.
Well, I don't know. My pop time is insanely good. but does this feel, I have to ask, like, so, you know, it feels like maybe heading into this offseason, it feels like, does this feel different? Like, in terms of maybe that you guys obviously, it seemed like turned a corner a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like turned a corner, and now maybe there's a little bit more resources coming your way. Does it feel a little bit different this offseason than last?
You know, I'll say yes as a blanket statement. Like, it's different, and I think we're still – building. We've got some young, we've had three teams in the minor leagues championship playoffs. We've got some talent coming. We found out a lot of questions that we got answered this year. We're not where we want to be. We've got great ownership, but I also always take baseball, and whether it's the off season or the in season, I just take it with a grain of salt. Like, we'll see, you know, we will see. I don't, like, speaking ahead of, like, we think there's, you know, these finalities or certainties in our game or predictions of what might happen. Players at the end of the day have the choice of where they want to go. And so they have to choose us when you are a free agent. And we set our sights on certain guys. But at the end of the day, they have to want to be there. They have to want the same things we want. And when you get in front of them and talk to them and present them with contract offers, all those things have to line up. And it's really hard. Players, it's a tough decision being – I haven't ever been a coveted free agent. Other than maybe if
you were a free agent, I mean, you know, it's still a tough decision.
It's a tough, there's money, there's family, there's geographic location. You know, just how there's so much that goes into it and reputation and, you know, whether guys are in for the long haul of building to get better. If guys want to jump right into, you know, a team like LA, that's got four MVPs, you know, like,
yeah, but David, you look at what you did in the second half. That's a selling point, man. Like, sure. I don't need to tell you that. Like, it's a whole lot easier to say, hey, this is the way we're trending. This is what we did. Sure. Come on in. The water's fine.
That's right. No, yeah, I'm 100% with you. I just mean everybody's in a different boat. You know, and everybody, when you get to be a free agent, you get to make your choice. And that's a powerful thing and a tough decision when it comes to dollars and family and a lot of different, the unknown, especially if you're switching, you know, he's switching to play like Xander Bogaerts. Let's just say you're a Boston guy, love him to death, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with his work.
He's got a lot of history there in Boston, man. You know, that's he's a quality human being and won two championships there and a really talented player. He gets to make his own choice. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I'm excited as heck, but I don't put the cart before the horse. I try to wait and see. And, I can't wait to whoever we get, to call them and congratulate them and can't wait to get to work with them.
Well, I tell you what, if it doesn't ever get to that point, you can know that if you ever do talk to Xander, just know that you can say, much like yourself, Xander, I also have a Baseballs and Boring t-shirt.
Okay, he has one. Good.
Hey, good. I have to ask, because this, I'm interested in sort of having to manage, and it's not managing on the field.
Okay.
The report came out about, you know, Wilson Contreras and whatever. Like, that was a weird time, right? And he's giving hugs. Sure. I mean, so can you take me back as much as you can about, from your perspective, what that was like? Because it seems as a manager, you have to juggle a lot of things going on there.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what managing is, right? You're managing the game, you're managing people, you're managing your team, the front office, the training staff, the strength. I mean, there's just the coaching staff, the message to the fans, the media. There's a lot of different balls you're juggling. So, I've got my first taste in the year before with, you know, Rizzo and Bryant, Baez, you know, that gave me a lot of insight on just their mindset. Those guys were obviously, you know, World Series champions that I was connected with from my playing days, that we had a rapport that we could just have conversation. They would come in and tell me what's on their mind, what was bothering them. Very open. And I'm a straight shooter. I try to speak with love and honesty as much as I possibly can. So, keeping them in the loop as much as I can. And also, like, you don't know, right? Like, there may be stuff like this team's calling, that team's calling. At the end, you know, half the time I'm like, I don't even really want to know because I don't have any control over it. You know, it doesn't, you know, so if I've got a question that a player's asking me, I can go to him. He's very transparent with me and we have great conversations. But half the time I just don't want to know. I don't want to ever lie to the player if they have a question for me, if I know something, or cause I'm not good at that. I value telling the truth. And so I don't want to tell them something that's not true. But I also don't want them to worry. So dealing with, you know, Wilson and him feeling like he might go, and the uncertainty of the trade deadline, you know, we don't really know. So, I just would communicate to him about playing and when I would give him a day off. Don't read into it. Like, this is just a day off. Like, you know, just continue to talk it out. I probably over communicate, but I try to let everybody in on, like, here's what I'm thinking. Here's why, you know, I'm sensitive to, like, when it is in the media and everybody's, but like, I'm going to let him catch the last game before we leave on a road trip and the trade deadline's on a road trip. I just, like, I don't know what's going to happen, but maybe this is his last game here. I don't know. And so when it comes down, he's not being traded, and you get to go deliver that news from somebody that really valued Chicago and staying there and loving the place. Like, it's good news. It's jump for joy. It's hugs. I get to keep a great player. I get to keep Ian Happ. I get to keep Wilson Contreras. It also stinks to see David Robertson leave and Michael Givens and, you know, the guys that left. So there's good and bad, and it's hour to hour. It's day to day. And you try to juggle those emotions and stay in, like, hey, we're playing St. Louis tonight. Let's get our shit together and focus. And we got a baseball game to win with it, whoever we're strapping it on with, you know? So
do you basically, because like you said, I have to focus on what's in front of me.
Right.
And so do you say to Jed, say, until it like the rubber meets the road, just don't let me know until we really need to know.
He'll hint at, like, hey, something's close with this certain player the day of. And so if, like, you know, one of the clubhouse guys come and talk to me, I'll have to get a guy at the bullpen to come in out of the game, or, you know, I'm not blindsided. And there's conversations, and, you know, Scott Efros this year, like, who wasn't even on the radar to get traded. You just hear every time after a game, you know, for the last felt like a month. It probably wasn't, but, like, you know, shoot, Scott Efros is getting a lot of attention. Shoot, Scott Efros, you know, it's like every other day they say that. It's like, well, we trade in Efros, you know, like, we better not be trading Scott Efros. That's one of my favorite, that's one of my best relievers, and he's under control for the next 5 years. You know, that's what the manager thinks, but they're looking at, I don't know who is in the mix of who we might get or that. I just hear, like, one of my really good players is name keeps coming up when we just have, you know, general discussions. So, but that's part of the business. So, yeah, I don't like to get in the weeds. I think some people do. I don't know what my value is in that. Like, my value is to keep the players focused on winning and working to get
better. That's hard. That's hard. This day and age, that's hard.
It's hard. Well, because there's so much outside noise. But if I don't change and I come in and be the consistent person every single day, that's all I can control. And when I talk to them, I give them honesty. They know that. They know if they walk in my office, they're getting honesty and truth. And when I see them, I'm rooting for them. We're trying to win that day. There's no other focus on my plate than trying to win that baseball game. So as long as I stay true to that, then they know the best managers I had, I knew what was expected of me. I knew who that person was going to be on a consistent basis. This is who Joe Maddon is. This is who Bobby Cox is. This is who Bruce Bochy is. This is who Terry Francona is. When I walk in the door every single day, this is what he's expected of me, and this kind of attitude he brings. I'm just trying to do that.
Okay, now we look back. This is a tough one. I'm sorry to ask you this, but when you play Wilson Contreras, right, in your heart, did you think that he was going to get traded?
I honestly didn't know.
Okay.
All I have is experience, and like, I've been doing this 3 years, Rob, and like 2020 was like, I don't know what that was. That was like an extended spring. No,
that's like half. I don't want to say it doesn't count.
So I got 2.5 years of experience.
And trade deadline was 3 weeks into the season, by the way. So yeah.
Right. Well, and then I get traded, you know, Riz and KB and Javi and those guys got traded at the deadline my second year, really my first full season. So it was very much like a learning process in the moment. And so did I have a feeling that some of those guys might get traded? Yes. But when they took KB had a scheduled day off before the trade deadline on a day game. And Rizzo came in my office the day before. He's like, I'm cooked. I need a day. So I was like, cool. So KB and Riz did not play the last home game at Wrigley Field. That was not because I was thinking about the trade deadlines, because KB had a scheduled day off and Riz came in my office and Rizzo what he needs for when he comes in here, because he plays every day. So, like, for me to say I was looking forward to that, I don't. I focus on winning the game that day. I don't I really don't give a crap about what the trade rumors and the trade deadlines and who might go where, because I don't have any control over that.
There you go. Nail on the head. Nail on the head. That's why you're the best. At last question. This is a good one. Okay. Which is more difficult? It seems like a silly question, but I think it's a good one. Which is more difficult, Dancing with the Stars or managing a baseball team? Now we've gone through like about a million layers of this job that you have, which I am like, I have the adrenaline coursing through your veins. Your heart rate's like at 180 right now because we're talking the great game of baseball. But then, you know, and people say, oh, well, it's just dancing. But the you know baseball, you know all this stuff, but you didn't know dance. So which is more difficult?
I would definitely say managing a baseball team is more difficult. And when I say difficult, I don't want it to come off. It's like there's more passion to learn. I learn something every day I get to sit there and manage. Even though I know baseball, it's not. It's about managing people. It's about managing, the game, the rules, the relationships, all that. Dancing, I at least learned to dance within a week and then could forget about it. You know, I can't dance with
Stars. Have you danced?
I tell you this, I've never been more nervous than I was on Dancing with Stars. I don't care, World Series at bat. I've never been more nervous than locking arms, fixing to start a dance in front of 15 million people live on TV, and I got no idea which foot goes first. That was definitely my partner in my ear yelling at me, right heel lead. I'll never forget that. My brain went blank when it started to count down for my time to go. That is a nervous energy. That
have you danced since? Have you utilized your new toolbox?
No. I tell everybody my stance. Like, everybody thinks I can go to a wedding and like just grab some lady and go through a ballroom dance or go through the cha-cha or something or the waltz. Like, my idea of dancing before that was like, you know, having a couple cocktails and grinding up on my ex-wife, you know, like that was my idea of dancing or Dancing with the Stars. Right. So like, I've definitely stayed off the dance floor as much as possible since then. I've just grabbed, you know, my 7-year-old daddy daughter dances and stuff like that. But that's about it.
All right. Well, I think as always, well said, well done. So there you go.
Glad you have me on. Always enjoy our conversation.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.